From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, Lady Bird Johnson and her historic 1964 whistle stop tour through the Old South.
She's courageous. She's compassionate. She actually was, in many ways, very well prepared for this. The Lady Bird special was really the culmination of her 27 years in politics alongside LBJ.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In 1964, America was deeply divided. The southern states were reeling from the ink still wet on President Lyndon Johnson's signature on the Civil Rights Act. Texan Johnson was seen by many in the old Confederate states as a Judas and a traitor to his southern heritage. To most political observers, the Deep South was a lost cause and a powder keg best avoided. But Lady Bird Johnson refused to cower. Armed with her resolve to reach out, politely listen, and become a bridge, she sought to heal the nation. And the mood of 1964 was especially contentious, even beyond the efforts to end Jim Crow in the South. President Kennedy had just been assassinated. Cold War hostilities with the Soviet Union were of grave concern after the Cuban Missile Crisis, and Americans had good reason to feel that they were living through a moment of great social change. Johnson's opponent in the presidential election was Republican Senator Barry Goldwater, a conservative champion, and he tapped into a significant stream of negative feelings against an activist federal government. He was opposed to the Civil Rights Act, saying it was a violation of states' rights. Nevertheless, just before dawn on Tuesday, October 6, 1964, the train dubbed the Lady Bird Special pulled away from Track 12 at Union Station. Here is audio from her stop in Ashland, Virginia.
I think you students are lucky young men. I wish I were your age, because I want to see the 1960s settle into the focus of history. I believe we are standing right on the verge of a period in man's history unsurpassed since the Renaissance, as a potential for good, and also, desperately enough, a potential for destruction. It is your great challenge and opportunity to participate in it, and I hope that a part of that participation will be an involvement in the affairs of your community and your country. Never stand on the sidelines. When I look at the hundreds of students like this, I like to recall the words of Virginia's own Thomas Jefferson. I like the dreams of the future better than the history of the past. Many thanks to all of you for coming out this early in the morning and making it such a special stop. I want you to know my daughter, Linda Bird.
As a young person, I feel so lucky to have all of you young people here joining me today, and I want to thank you all for coming. This is our generation, the volunteer generation. We have 10,000 Peace Corps volunteers all over the world working. We have about 8,000 people who came to Washington this summer to work in various capacities of government. I hope that all of y'all will volunteer to work for our campaign this fall and the election of all these good Democrats we have with us. Over half the people in the world are under 25, and that means y'all.
The deeper into the South that the Lady Bird Special traveled, the more volatile things became. There were opponents who showed up and jeered at her, called her Blackbird for her support for civil rights, but Lady Bird held her own.
My friends, this is a country of many viewpoints, and I respect your right to express your own. Now it's my turn to express mine. Thank you.
Shannon McKenna-Schmidt has written a new book about Lady Bird Johnson's Whistle Stop Tour. It's called You Can't Catch Us, Lady Bird Johnson's Trailblazing 1964 Campaign Train and the Women Who Rode With Her.
Well, this campaign train, the Lady Bird Johnson who emerges, I think will surprise people. This is Lady Bird Johnson. She's delivering to the American people something that they've never seen before. Their first lady whistle-stopping down the tracks. She's courageous. She's compassionate. She actually was, in many ways, very well prepared for this. The Lady Bird special was really the culmination of her 27 years in politics alongside LBJ. And I think that alone might surprise people. The tragic circumstances that brought LBJ and Lady Bird to the White House is also something that very much played into the Lady Bird special at the time. And because JFK's assassination 10 months earlier still loomed over the nation, and security precautions for this train were very high. They forbade the president from doing it. So encompassed within this story of the Lady Bird special and its 4 days down the tracks is very much what was taking place at the time in the country.
Also, this is right after the signing of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and the South was not friendly to that, the typical South. How was sending Lady Bird Johnson on this campaign train, how was this seen as an overture to, in a way, to try to heal that?
That was very much part of her motivation for going. So this is October 1964. LBJ is in a race for the presidency against Barry Goldwater. But polls have LBJ leading widely. He doesn't need the South to win the election. The South, as you said, is very much seething at President Johnson for signing the Civil Rights Act, and partly because he was from the South. He's being called a traitor to the South. So he doesn't need the South to win the election. And that is known. Some of his aides say, why make the effort? We don't need it. Let's just write it off. But that wasn't going to work for LBJ or Lady Bird. And Lady Bird is from the South. She's proud of her Southern heritage, and she wants to go on this trip to help bridge the divide and also to get votes for LBJ's reelection. But it was a lot about not leaving anyone behind and not leaving the South behind. And she said she didn't know how many votes she would get or how many minds that she would change, but at least they wouldn't lose by default.
I remember seeing LBJ in 1968. I was a child, and he flew into San Antonio at the Las Palmas Shopping Center in the Johnson City Windmill, which was the helicopter. And what a big deal that was. Was it like that for the train stop, the whistle stops with Lady Bird?
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, President Johnson, I think people might get a little bit different view of LBJ also from this book, because he was very proud of Lady Bird and her abilities, and he had the utmost faith in her. And in fact, he saw the campaign train off in Alexandria, Virginia. He met the train in Raleigh, where he and Lady Bird jointly headlined a very huge rally. And then they also met up again at the end of the line in New Orleans, again, to much, much fanfare. So along the way in this story, you do see LBJ campaigning as well in Raleigh, New Orleans. I think something like 200,000 people lined the route from the airport in New Orleans into the route that the motorcade was taking to downtown. And so the Lady Bird special also gave him this more high-profile effort to launch the campaign into the South.
In the book, you show Lady Bird Johnson stepping into the role as First Lady that didn't really exist before. First Lady campaigning solo at scale. And so was this a job that she wanted, that she relished, or was this something that she had to be talked into?
I think that she relished this job and that she understood the importance of it. And at the end of the day, that the president and the first lady were there to serve the American people. Lady Bird's role model was Eleanor Roosevelt. And
which you've written about before. You've written about Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yes. Yes. And that's actually how I came to write this book. After that one, I was looking for first ladies who had made momentous journeys. Lady Bird took inspiration from Eleanor as both a traveler and an activist. And even before she set out on the campaign trail and her months before that as first lady, she was crisscrossing the country. She wanted to be a link between the American people and the Oval Office. And Lady Bird, she also had more, as one reporter pointed out, more experience on the national political stage than any first lady who had preceded her. She took a much more active role than a typical second lady when JFK was president, just for reasons Jackie Kennedy wasn't as available or interested in those kinds of public political roles. And she also would stand in for President Kennedy or LBJ and other members of the administration. So she was very well prepared when she came into the role of First Lady. But of course, as we mentioned, the tragic circumstances also played in. But I think she was very cognizant of that as well.
In the Robert Caro biographies of LBJ, typically we would see these anecdotes about how LBJ would be so aggressive and gruff and cruel to individuals that he was working with. And then it would be Lady Bird who would follow up and say, well, Lynn didn't really mean that, almost as if they were playing good cop, bad cop all the time.
Yeah, that's an interesting way for you to put it, good cop, bad cop. And yes, I know that there's, I thought about this a lot while I was writing this book. And of course, as you mentioned, Robert Caro, and there are biographies of Lady Bird and even a whole book called Lady Bird and Lyndon, but how to present this relationship that was very complicated. And yes, he was sometimes cruel to other people, cruel to her. And I come back to something that she said, and, you know, she acknowledged his faults. And then she said, I know we were better together than apart. And I think about that phrase a lot. And it does encompass what she ultimately thinks that their relationship achieved. And the other thing I found interesting is that she, at the time, was recognized as a political partner to LBJ in the media. And I think that that's something that's maybe forgotten these days as well. When LBJ accepted the vice presidential slot at the 1960 Democratic Convention, there was a veteran male political reporter covering it. And he said to a colleague something along the lines of, Lyndon would never have made it this far without the help of that woman. She is magnificent. So I think maybe it's been a little bit lost and forgotten today that it was covered at the time, her role as partner to LBJ.
Well, there's a lot that we've learned since then about their partnership. Apparently, Lyndon Johnson wasn't even sure if he should run for president in 1964, and he turned to Lady Bird to write up a memo, pros and cons, and ideas about the campaign. It's so insightful. It also predicted that he would choose not to run for re-election in 1968.
Yes, that is, I think, a very great example of the role that she did play in LBJ's life as both. And that covers territory of both their political and personal partnership.
And her brilliance, her sheer brilliance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that he understood that she was devoted to him, and her life in politics rose because that was his vocation, although she did come to very much love politics. But I do think that's a great example of the melding of the political and personal that shaped both of their lives.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, speaking with Shannon McKenna-Schmidt, author of You Can't Catch Us, Lady Bird Johnson's trailblazing 1964 campaign train, and the women who rode with her. On this whistle-stop train tour through the South, the Deep South, And what did people hear from Lady Bird Johnson that they needed to hear?
The thing about Lady Bird and why I think she was so effective, and also I don't think anybody could have successfully done this trip except for Lady Bird Johnson. She was from the South. She had the political experience. And also, as she said, I'm not a hard sell person. And so what she did is she went in there and she was sincere. And she told people, I love the South. I'm from the South. I love the old customs of the South. But she also impressed upon people that there was the need to move forward and march with the times. And I really think it's her sincerity that resonated with people.
Well, beyond the campaigning to the people and showing up where people typically don't show up and be able to communicate, I'm here to listen, I'm not here to sell you something, but she was also very active in trying to shore up the Democratic political machine of the South, and getting politicians who were afraid to, regional politicians, local politicians, who were kind of hiding because of this, the reaction to the signing of the Civil Rights Act. And so she was able to show them that there was still a role for them, I guess.
Yes. So the Lady Bird Special was the major Democratic campaign effort in the South during the 1964 election. And yes, it was very much meant to shore up Democratic Party unity and also to support the politicians who were weathering the hostility over the signing of the Civil Rights Act. And one of the early indicators for me when I started researching this story was the amount of media coverage it received. I mean, newspaper articles number in the thousands. We have ones that went out over the wire written by national political reporters like Helen Thomas to coverage in tiny newspapers in these towns all along the route. And what also struck me was not only the amount of coverage, but the way in which the Lady Bird Special was covered. This was a serious campaign strategy and a history-making endeavor, and it was treated as such by the media.
The message it seemed to be sending to the South was about it's time to move on, it's time to move forward. And the politics of the future, or the future itself, the economy of the future, is going to have to be inclusive. Today, of course, we have the backlash against DEI. But this was a time when we were saying, or at least Lady Bird was trying to promote the idea of more inclusivity. And she was doing that in a way that still talked about how much she loved the South. And this was a very nuanced message in which the messenger is almost as important or more important than the message itself?
Yes, absolutely. As I said, I honestly don't think anyone else could have successfully done this campaign trip. And it was very much a message of inclusivity and advocacy. And she had one line in her speech in Savannah where she said that people didn't, not to be left in the slack waters of history. And that's another phrasing of hers that really stayed with me. And Lady Bird gave 47 speeches along the route, and every single speech was customized for the place that she gave it. And she also would go off script to a degree. But that, to me, goes back to her sincerity and how she wasn't just feeding people canned political talking points. She very much believed what she was doing on this mission and what she was conveying to people.
So a train whistle stop tour. This was an era where the train was kind of, it was old school. People were flying around. Where the train depot wasn't the best parts of town. Was that deliberate?
Whistle stopping at the time, Harry Truman had told LBJ in 1960, a lot of people don't know where the airport is, but if you can get on a train, they'll show up at the depot for you. And Truman had done his own successful whistle stop tour that's credited with helping him win re-election. And so the whistle stop, yes, very, very considered a bit quaint at the time.
I mean, they didn't even have a car. They had to pull the car out of the junk heap, right?
Yes, exactly. It was so quaint that they were trying to find a parlor observation car to act for the caboose. And that was a train with more lounge seating. It had a platform on the back. So it was definitely a bit more quaint, but it really resonated with these people. There was a town called Ahoskie, North Carolina, where no passenger train had come through in a dozen years. So the fact that this campaign train was coming through was a very big deal. And also, this is a practical way of campaigning, because the train has to get from Washington, D.C. to New Orleans in 4 days, nearly 1,700 miles it needs to cover. And so by pulling the train, you know, having it stop in each of these towns, Lady Bird could speak from the back of the platform, and then they could be on their way. So it was also a very practical way of campaigning. And Lady Bird had taken part in 1960, LBJ had done a campaign train through the South. So they also built on that experience.
Well, practical, but also risky. In the view that this could have been dangerous. It was like we were still in the time of assassinations, and there were death threats against her on this. So how do they take that into account? What kind of death threats did they get?
So right around the time that they were preparing all the plans for the Lady Bird special, the Warren Commission report came out, and that took the Secret Service to task for inadequate protections on the day of JFK's assassination. And so that was this very immediate reminder of the danger of this. And there was a bomb threat. So after the Lady Bird special was announced to the press in mid-September, about 3 weeks before the train left, there was a bomb threat. An informant to the FBI told them that a gunrunner for the KKK wanted to bomb the train. He couldn't get anyone to go along with him, but it did make the Secret Service really ramp up protections. And as I said earlier, they would not allow President Johnson to make this trip. The precautions were extensive. There was an extra engine that rode 15 minutes ahead of the Lady Bird special in case the tracks were bombed. Three helicopters flew overhead and accompanied the train the entire way. Secret Service agents canvassed towns ahead of time. They rode on the train. They flanked the platform where Lady Bird spoke. And as festive as the campaign train was, there was always this sense of foreboding.
How did this trip, what did it signal for women-led politics?
That's another excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up. The fact that this was not just the first lady doing this for the first time, but the fact that this is a women-led undertaking, which had also never happened before in politics. And you have all of these bold women doing this, and they did get some misogynistic backlash as they traveled down the tracks. And so this train campaign really is helped move forward, not just first ladies going from being decorative on the campaign trail and being shown, but they weren't allowed to speak. They could just sit there and look pretty. So this really moved things forward for women participating in political campaigns. And also, Betty Friedan's The Feminine Mystique had been published the year before. And so bursting this bubble of the American housewife being fulfilled only by domesticity. And what we see as the Lady Bird special travels down the tracks is how she's a role model for women and girls. A lot of young people turned out for this train. So this was a very great indicator of women's capabilities in politics and beyond.
You Can't Catch Us, the title of your book, comes from a specific incident. Can you tell us that little story?
Yes, I love this. So the title of the book, You Can't Catch Us, at a stop in North Carolina, the train was leaving the station, and some young boys ran after the train carrying signs, pro-Goldwater signs, and with a picture of him on it. And 20-year-old Linda Bird Johnson, Lady Bird and Lyndon's eldest daughter, she flips on the loudspeaker and she very cheerfully says to them, "You're running after the 20th century. You can't catch us." And that ultimately became the title of the book, because I just think that it embodies not only the forward momentum of the train, but the surrounding social progress and civil rights and women's rights that was taking place at the time.
So in the book, there's a lot about the role of the First Lady and questions about, you know, what is the role of the first, of that, of the wife of the president. And it's not an official job, but it carries a lot of responsibility. Lady Bird redefined that job, the First Lady role, but it does seem like every First Lady redefines it. We're seeing that now, today, with the First Lady we have now, breaking norms and using it to accumulate wealth. So how did Lady Bird Johnson redefine the role of First Lady?
Well, certainly in regards to political spouses campaigning, she broke the barrier on that, because Eleanor Roosevelt, who we remember today as this fearless trailblazer, she did not campaign for FDR. And she said that it's kind of unfathomable to think that she once said this, but the job of a candidate's wife was to shrivel up into a ball and be as inconspicuous as possible. So certainly that barrier got broken. And I think part of what Lady Bird did was, it's important to have choices. And some first ladies want to be more active, and some do not. And I do think it's important to have choices. But she very much wanted to, she very much was serving the American people. And she was constantly crisscrossing the country, talking about the administration's great society initiatives, addressing civil rights and poverty. And so that was very important to her. And I find her very inspirational in that regard.
She was absolutely in favor of reforms to civil rights, and she wouldn't stay at a segregated hotel, things like that. And she communicated that to Lyndon.
Yes. So she witnessed some of those. She would travel by car a lot from Washington, D.C. to Texas. And when she was traveling with people of color, yes, I mean, she witnessed that the segregation and firsthand. And that was very instrumental. And she fully believed in the Civil Rights Act. And she was both proud of her Southern heritage and of what LBJ had done to advance civil rights.
Shannon McKenna-Schmidt is the author of You Can't Catch Us, Lady Bird Johnson's Trailblazing 1964 Campaign Train and the Women Who Rode With Her. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past Texas Matters programs on our website at tpr.org. Download and subscribe to us wherever you get cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.